Now, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, announced this week it would stop sending aid to Hurricane Maria survivors in Puerto Rico. The agency later backtracked that announcement after public outrage, saying it had never intended to stop providing aid. Over 4 months after the hurricane, San Juan's mayor, Carmen Yulín Cruz, told CNN Wednesday that Puerto Rico is still recovering.
Just this past Monday, 3 days ago, I had to send to a school 45 minutes out of San Juan water and powdered milk. These children have no electricity, have no running water, and there wasn't enough food for them to take care of themselves. So this is not mission accomplished. And I think that what has happened is that Puerto Rico and the botched effort and the inability of President Trump to show, forget true leadership, to show empathy as a human being has become a black eye in the United States and has become a black eye for the Trump administration.
Charles Venator Santiago is an associate professor with a joint appointment in political science and El Instituto Latina, Caribbean, and Latin American Studies Institute at the University of Connecticut. He's with us for an update on the latest news from Puerto Rico. Charles, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, and good to talk to you.
Let's start with this FEMA announcement and this back and forth. What do you make of what we saw from FEMA this week?
This is part of an ongoing negotiation. So FEMA had originally talked about transferring all the resources to the Puerto Rican government so the Puerto Rican government could manage it, particularly at a local level, at a mainland level. And then after the exposure by NPR and others and the complaints in Congress, they backtracked. But part of the challenge also is that the food stuff that FEMA is providing is not necessarily the best food stuff for people.
What do you mean?
They're just providing simple water and sometimes MREs or ready-to-eat meals. And sometimes they're providing food that is salty and sort of canned and not necessarily the healthiest food for the average person.
When FEMA initially told NPR that they would end aid to hurricane survivors, Alejandro de la Campa, its director in Puerto Rico, had this to say.
So we need to bring back the economy of Puerto Rico. People need to start buying in supermarkets. You know, it's obvious that if you get something for free, you're not going to go buy it.
What do you make of that argument? If we stop sending food for free, the economy will start bouncing back as people buy the things they need.
Part of the challenge is that there's not enough electricity to fuel most of the companies in the area. So we're still talking about 40% of the population without reliable electricity in the island. So small businesses aren't up. There's a lot of unemployment. So I'm not sure where the money's going to come to fuel the local economy without functioning electricity or functioning commerce in the island. So a lot of folks are dependent on food because they just are unemployed and don't have access to money.
Can you give us just a bigger picture, a sense of what things are like in Puerto Rico in this long recovery effort?
So right now, part of the problem is that there's a lot of infrastructure damage. And even though the federal government has offered some relief, the Puerto Rican government has been unable to manage funding to that
We're losing our connection, Charles. I'll have our director give you a call back. I mean, we'll try a different phone if possible. We're talking about the latest right now in Puerto Rico, the long recovery effort from the hurricane there months after the event itself, and some back and forth from FEMA about how aid would be provided. You can join in with your thoughts if you have connections to Puerto Rico, if you've been there, if you have family there. We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on the administration's response in this ongoing recovery effort and the place of Puerto Rico as part of the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Looking at the latest from Puerto Rico, let's try our guest again. Charles, can you hear me?
Yes, sorry, I'm in Washington, D.C.
Yes, we lost our phone connection there. So you were talking about the conditions on the ground now in Puerto Rico.
So there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be repaired. There's not enough electricity being generated or electricity being transferred. So commerce is sort of down, or at least it hasn't picked up enough. There's been a lot of talk about migration. So a lot of Puerto Ricans are moving to the mainland. mostly working age Puerto Ricans, so people who would be fueling the local economy. There's high unemployment because commerce is not functioning. Water is still unstable. Not everyone has access to water. And we're going on 6 months living under these conditions. And there's not enough, the government's bankrupt. There's not enough liquidity for the government to function in the island.
What's, from the federal perspective, what could Puerto Rico use from the federal government that hasn't happened yet?
One of the things that the federal government has asked for is an appropriate system to manage federal funds. And the Puerto Rican government has had a hard time providing numbers, statistical information that's useful, or creating an agency or government agency, local government agency that can guarantee that federal funds are not going to be mismanaged.
Can you talk about the Puerto Rico government? What are the roadblocks to them being able to do those things, to manage relief efforts and even to provide information that would help with those relief efforts?
Part of the problem with the Puerto Rican government, and this cuts across political parties, there are two main political parties that have been doing this for years, is that it's run based on a system of clientelism. Somebody gets elected, the mayors then send the people who elected those folks to be employed. So there's a lot of inept people working in the local government based on a lot of clientelism and a lot of corruption. And the bureaucracies are inefficient. They're mismanaged, and they don't have the resources to have standards in place. Permits are hard to issue. People are just not trained to run government agencies in the island. And part of the problem is that the federal government has offered some relief, but there's no partner to manage resources. Now, the challenge is that the governor has been trying to distract from this debate by pushing for statehood right now rather than figuring out how to fix the government. There is an effort by Congress to use the Fiscal Oversight Board to start managing, or rather micromanaging, but it's not clear that they have the capabilities right now to manage government agencies, to use money and resources in an appropriate way.
So this sounds like a really, obviously, a hard problem to tackle, but more so than we might have thought. There's the direct damage of the hurricane, the infrastructure you're talking about, an already troubled economy being hurt by the hurricane, but then a territorial government that is unprepared to deal with a situation like this. I mean, how do you even get started there?
That's a great question. The first thing that I would do is I would create or assign an agency that can coordinate resources from the federal government and the Puerto Rican government at every level, and that can manage resources, money, to be more specifically. And this could either be done through the Financial Oversight Board, or this could be a congressionally appointed or presidentially appointed board. But there has to be a commitment to manage federal funds and resources in an effective and realistic manner. And then they need to hire people in Puerto Rico who know, understand the area, and who are willing to work and who need jobs.
Do you see any signs that that's happening? Are there efforts to make that kind of board happen?
There have been some demands by Congress and legislators to the Puerto Rican government, and there have been assurances that the government is moving in that direction. But again, right after Hurricane Harvey, or 2 days later, the governor of Texas already had a plan to accept federal money. It took the governor of Puerto Rico 40 days to begin to talk about a plan. You can go to any state government and you can get a public accounting of the expenses and the budget of the government, state government. In Puerto Rico, the federal government has been asking for years to get an accounting of the government. So there has to be some sort of political change in the island, and a move away from traditional clientelist and corrupt politics to a more bureaucratic, or rather technocratic, state where people are willing to help. The human capital is there. There are enough people who can do good things in Puerto Rico and who are looking for work. We just need to move beyond partisan politics.
And it seems like there is some finger pointing. We heard from the mayor of San Juan saying this was a Trump administration problem. We've heard people blaming Puerto Rico more. It sounds like a more of an all of the above sort of situation.
This is a complete failure of government from the president down to mayors in the island. And everybody has a share of the problem. Everybody shares in the problem. The problem with President Trump is that he hasn't exhibited leadership. He hasn't created an agency that can help manage all these resources or interventions, and he's put a lot of limits on FEMA and a lot of federal agencies. To give you an example, right now in Connecticut, we're talking about treating Puerto Rican migrants as homeless. That's the only way they can get access to funds to support them in their situation. This is something that FEMA should be managing. If they're going to move people to Connecticut, they should be able to finance or help them finance their lives until they can get back on their feet. And that's not an option.
Charles Venator Santiago is with us from the University of Connecticut. We're talking about the latest in the long recovery effort from hurricanes in Puerto Rico. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you know someone who is still in Puerto Rico, someone who has left Puerto Rico? Is that you? Have you relocated since the hurricane? And what do you think of federal efforts to help in Puerto Rico? What needs to happen? What needs to change? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our look at the latest from Puerto Rico. Charles Venator Santiago is with us from the University of Connecticut. You can join in at 800-642-123. How do you think the federal government should help or support Puerto Rico now? And do you have connections with Puerto Rico, friends there, family there? Are you from there yourself? What are you seeing? What are you hearing? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Charles, we heard from a caller who couldn't stay online, Jay in Viroqua. He said if this happened in one of the 48 continental states, this would have been taken care of. Puerto Rico is kind of, he says, out of sight, out of mind for the public and for political leaders. What do you think?
There is some of that. But remember, Congress assumed responsibility over Puerto Rico back in 2016. Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. So in that sense, Congress does bear a responsibility to govern the island. The problem is that there hasn't been much discussion around whether Puerto Rico should be treated as a part of the United States or whether it should be treated as a foreign country. That's one. And then the second issue is that I think in the States there is a perception that, or there's a demand by the local population, that agencies need to function. That's not just about what political power parties in power. And that's not part of the history of Puerto Rican politics.
These aren't things that are going to be solved quickly, right?
No. They're talking about electricity reaching some areas by the summer or the fall. So that means some people will have been living without electricity or water for at least a year.
Let's go to our callers now. Francisco is on the line in Milwaukee. Francisco, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Francisco?
Well, you guys were talking about there's a lot of issues in the island around the logistics and everything. Well, even though we're a small island, we cover most of the island with mountains, so a lot of those electric cords and power went off because of it went out from the mountains. I have all my family living there. My sister still without power. You guys, I don't know if you guys remember about Irma, the storm that came before the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they were without power, so it's almost like the Maria was in September. So basically, from start of September, they were without power. A lot of people are still without power, and basically, it's something that the island wasn't prepared for. It. The government wasn't prepared for it because we've been a lot of time without that big hurricane coming through, but still people thinking that. But most of groceries and the food that people from U.S. send to the island are still in the ports because they're still moving it now. There are a lot of people without power, as I said before, and so if I have a truck, I can drive, but because I don't know where to go.
Francisco, thanks a lot. Good luck to your family. Hope they get power back soon. Francisco, Charles saying that even some of the relief that's there is sitting there. Is that right?
Yes. Part of it is that there hasn't been enough resources in the ports to unload some issues. There are still some towns that don't have bridges that haven't been rebuilt. So there are some towns that are, or communities rather, that are still disconnected. There hasn't been enough of a cleanup of the debris, so it's still hard to drive in some areas. There aren't traffic lights in some areas functioning. In some areas, even in San Juan. Yes, I mean, there are a lot of folks who are living in the mountains and communities that don't have access to basic needs, basic resources.
And Francisco also saying there was no real hurricane preparedness and recovery plan before the event.
There was a plan. The governor refused to enact it. And that was discussed in public hearings. They had, and that resulted in lack of the lack of communication throughout the island. But the island did have a emergency preparedness plan. It's just the governor did not enact it or implement it.
Francisco, thanks a lot for calling in. Appreciate it. We've heard calls on Wednesday. Senator Marco Rubio said lawmakers should pass a disaster relief package for Puerto Rico. Do you think Congress is going to do something like that anytime soon, Charles?
Well, the latest conversation on the relief package is that the Fiscal Oversight Board is going to negotiate a fiscal plan for the government. And they're talking about approving a $10 billion a year, five-year rebuilding plan. That's going to be partly managed by the Fiscal Oversight Board, or at least money, expenditures higher than $10 million. I think it's going to happen sooner or later. The question is how efficient it's going to be and what structure is going to be in place to manage federal funds.
And I wanted to ask about another issue you brought up earlier, Charles. People leaving Puerto Rico, as you said, often working-age people. You've got some in your state of Connecticut. We hear a lot of people in Florida. How big are we talking about this outflow of people from Puerto Rico to the mainland United States?
That's a very good question. In the Puerto Rican government, the Department of Statistics already complained that the Puerto Rican government is not measuring the outflow accurately. They're estimating that about 2% of the population is leaving, or probably between 200,000 to 300,000 people. TSA reported 850 petitions for something called temporary shelter assistance to help them with hotels and relocation. We don't know, but there is an estimate that around probably between 300,000 and 400,000 people, maybe 500,000 people, may leave the island in the next year or so, or next 2 years. That's the latest estimate that we're getting, but we really won't know for a couple more months.
Go back to our callers now. Ryan is on the line in Madison. Ryan, hi.
Hi there. It's kind of disappointing that our government can't, you know, we have giant ships that can pull in off the coast and act as hospitals and bases, produce water from the ocean. We have logistics capabilities and the ability to build bridges. We've seen that in Iraq and Afghanistan, dozens of other nations. It's amazing that hasn't happened.
Ryan, thanks for the call. Charles, the role of the U.S. military potentially in rebuilding?
So Puerto Rico could be an example of all the great things that the United States could do. The military did begin, or at least initially began, a process of rebuilding or fixing. But they ran into a lot of tension with local mayors who wanted to control the distribution of goods and materials. And it's an expensive project, and they didn't have the necessary resources to clear the island and rebuild the basic infrastructure that they needed. So, yes, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers could do a better job, but they haven't. And it's a little bit more too expensive for President Trump to finance.
Ryan, thanks a lot for that call. Charles, on a personal note, the first time we talked to you about this, I think you had family there. Your mother was still on the island. She has since left, I think. What's going on with your family now as it relates to Puerto Rico?
That's an ongoing conversation. My mother arrived. We managed to bring her up 2 weeks after the hurricane, and we literally saved her life because she had a pneumonia and a heart condition that she picked up as a result of the trauma that she suffered. And she is leaving for Puerto Rico tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
She's light arrived about 3 weeks ago to her apartment. She lives two blocks away from the wealthiest zone in the island, and they had no light until first week of January. And then last week, they lost power, so she has no water and electricity. So she's returning to her home because she's 74, and she wants to be in her home. And she's not sure whether she's going to have power or water from now on. We'll see how long she lasts under those conditions.
And so she might come back here if those conditions don't change?
I'm hoping, but, she's a little stubborn, and her sisters and cousins are in Puerto Rico, and she wants to enjoy them. And it's too cold up in Connecticut and Massachusetts. But she's leaving tomorrow morning to return to her apartment. We'll see. I'll know in a week.
And good luck to her. And do we know I know the statistics are tough here. Do we know if a lot of people who left are starting to go back to Puerto Rico?
We know some people are starting to go back, but they don't have anywhere to go back to or jobs. The problem is that FEMA is bringing a lot of folks to the states, and they're giving them temporary assistance. But, for example, in the state of Connecticut, FEMA is already cutting temporary assistance, and people are left in the streets without any money either to return or to survive, at least in the state of Connecticut. But I'm hearing similar stories in Florida. So it's a tough situation. Plus, half the schools aren't, or at least a third of the schools aren't up or don't have electricity and don't have any food. So students who are enrolled in the states are likely to finish the semester and then see what happens. But it's an ongoing disaster, and that's the problem. It's hard for people to return to the island unless they have some sort of resources or family.
Well, good luck to your family, Charles, and thanks for joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you.
That's Charles Venator Santiago, associate professor at the University of Connecticut. He joined us for an update on the latest news out of Puerto Rico.